don't normally pay attention to the statistics for the website, or really the download statistics. I just assume that nobody listens to my show. Ever. I'm having that kind of day. How are you? This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail for now, toll-free nationwide. Eventually it'll be a live call-in number again. How are you, Josh? Haven't talked to you in a bit.
Yeah, I know. It's doing pretty good.
Good. And Wes, I talked to you entirely too much.
That is true, but I am both a voice on the show and a listener of the show.
Oh.
So there's one download.
That's one. And I do a test download, so that's two hits.
I download on two separate apps.
But the headline, but I noticed that the website was getting a lot more traffic this week.
Oh.
And I was really surprised, like, what the heck is going on? Because I've had my head wrapped in constructing radio stations and working new gigs and medical problems that I may or may not talk about as time goes on. But I noticed that we went from, we usually only get a few hundred hits a day on the website, and then one day we got 4,000, and I wanted to know why. It turns out the world's a little less stupid this week with the passing of Billy Graham. I know I get crap a lot for being happy when deeply harmful people die. I don't know, does Billy Graham count as deeply harmful?
Yes, for many, many decades.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, on a Christian curve, no, but in a realistic curve, yes, absolutely.
Okay, fair. Well, the reason why we got a lot of hit is that one of the most popular articles on our website, which we was written by Mike in 2011,
yeah.
Which is Billy Graham, America's favorite bigot. and it's just a list of accurate things information about Billy Graham, information that, you know, you might want to know. When everybody starts praising him and, I'll just read the news brief. You think after 8 years of this, I'd know how to pronounce evangelical properly? Today's not that day. Evangelical preacher Billy Graham died last week at the age of 99. Graham had advised each U.S. president since Truman, often very closely in personal, spiritual, and political matters. Graham's family held a private funeral in Asheville, North Carolina, after which his body was moved to the Billy Graham Library in Charlotte. Graham's body will then lie in repose at the U.S. Capitol Rotunda, an honor seldom given to private individuals, before a second private funeral and burial at the library. He is reported to be buried with all of his attendants. All living former presidents are expected to attend. They're not the people being buried.
I was just envisioning like an Egyptian funeral. Everybody.
Yeah, this does kind of have some pharaonic stuff going on here, doesn't it?
Don't they get locked in alive with that too? So
yeah,
can you imagine like
quite possible. I don't know. Are we talking about the good one in the 90s or the one with Tom Cruise?
The good one in the 90s.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, we get to learn a lot of cool. If you want to figure out what kind of knob Billy Graham was, you can read this article. You can talk about his friendship with the torturous potentates of North Korea. And, just the usual thing about anytime you meet a happy and healthy and kind atheist, that they are neither happy nor healthy nor kind, because such things are impossible without God, according to him.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you want more proof of what kind of guy he is, I mean, look at his spawn. Look how Franklin turned out, and what a what a fantastic specimen of humanity he's turned out to be in his bigoted, hateful, regressive tours of America and partisan politics, the likes of which Billy wouldn't touch. Yeah, I don't have a lot of good things to say about the guy. And I'm kind of, you know, okay, he can't do any more damage. And if that means that I feel a little, you know, a little ping in my heart because of that, I'm not going to apologize.
The thing with Billy Graham is he's basically the moral center of the evangelicals, or he's claimed to be, or he was the unassailable evangelical, essentially, because he didn't get caught up in the same corruption that brought down like Jim Bakker or those types,
right?
In the 80s, where he
paved the way for all of this.
Yes.
And the fact of the matter is, he's been, you know, for the most more of the latter part of his life, and especially, you know, the entire 21st century chunk of it, he's been completely outmoded by pastors and you know, religious demagogues.
Who, all of us, his own creation.
Who preach a much more virulent and painful version of his old-time religion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't thank him for that.
No, I'm not thanking him. I'm just saying, like all of the evangelicals, he was probably like the closest thing they had to someone that was actually not morally corrupt in most ways.
No, I'd be nice if everybody were. I will say, if the stuff that they had learned from Billy Graham was the nonpartisanship, that, you know, we'd probably be in a little bit better situation right now than dealing with a president who is presently at CPAC pretending that he's a Christian so that he can get the cheap vote. Perhaps the problem with Billy Graham is that the people who have learned and have made millions of dollars or billions of dollars in his image have learned some fairly destructive things because, well, they're the destructive things that work, but they didn't learn how to cooperate in any meaningful way.
Yeah, pretty much.
I always thought Billy Graham was one of the early proponents of like the prosperity gospel.
Yeah.
And that's, you know,
was he? I'll admit I never paid very close attention to Billy Graham because the first, you know, the few times that I saw him, he was just, oh, you're that kind of guy.
I mean, he's the standard televangelist kind of guy that, you know, asked people for money on TV all the time. Kind of the same thing where you say that, yes, you will get, a lot of good things back to you the
blessings.
More you donate.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I didn't pay attention to Billy Graham outside of his political sort of forays. You know, I knew he had a fairly strong radio empire. He was on television. These are things that I know. But, you know, much like Harold Camping, I am aware of these things. And if he says something amusing, I'd go check it out. But He was not as, let's say he was not as consistently amusing as, say, you know, the 700 Club.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
good
right.
Old Pat.
Yeah. So, there you are. I don't know. You think I'm going to get yelled at for that one?
Yeah, I mean, some people are going to defend him.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I remember when Antonin Scalia died.
Oh, yeah. You
a couple of years ago, I nearly threw a party. And, and you know, social media being what it is, thought that I was... You know, like I was the one who was systematically trying to make humans slightly less human by just saying, oh, I'm glad he's gone. I'm glad he's dead.
Yeah, I don't get the whole, you know, you shouldn't speak ill of the dead thing.
If I'm
going to speak ill of you as a person while you're alive, I'm not going to change that because you are now deceased.
Right.
I would say the difference is, Scalia was actually still able to invoke kind of change, and he was doing it in a negative factor, where Graham's been a non-entity for the last decade.
That is the difference. I was like, okay, he can't. But Scalia can no longer do any more damage. He was, you know, he was doing quite a bit of damage here and there, and he was an active face in it. And so when he was no longer an influence, that was a really great thing. This to me is just like, okay, well, he's gone.
Right.
That's done. It's over now.
No, it's just his grandson or his son.
Yeah. Oh, is it his son or his grandson? I'm not entirely sure.
I think it's
sure.
His son.
Okay.
I think his grandson actually doesn't like him.
Is this like a Hank Williams 2, Hank Williams 3 kind of thing?
Yeah.
Benny Hinn did, you know, kind of renounce prosperity gospel a tad. But I'm sure that's not really going to be
kidding
true.
I disbelieve you.
Yeah, he still wants the money.
I disbelieve him.
Yeah, no, I can't believe he would say something like that.
These are the words kind of coming out of his mouth because of the death. He's because of the death of Pastor Graham here. Basically, he rethought all of his life and saying that, you know, it's not as important though.
In his money. Enormous mansion from his private jet.
He says he rides commercial. Didn't say if his first class or not, but
in a shotgun shack in another part of the world.
His net worth is $60 million.
Yeah.
He's prosperity all the way.
I'm saying these are the words coming out of his
mouth. Should we mention what prosperity gospel is? I don't think we've actually defined it. And it's not that common. Prosperity gospel is a branch of Christianity that specifically suggests that proper piety and proper obeisance to the Pope of whatever evangelical religion that you happen to be paying attention to will actually result in riches in this life.
Right.
It's a little bit less pie in the sky when you die, and a little bit more if you subscribe now, you will save umpteen hundreds of dollars on toilet paper by joining Amway.
Yeah, a lot of
also Jesus.
Yeah, this is very pyramid scam to me.
Yeah.
A lot of it is they'll sit there and say, hey, you send us $7 and what will happen is something will happen in your life where you'll triple your money some way.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you give us credit for that.
Triple or tens or hundreds of times, yeah.
All right, let's do an email. We got Rex from the Philippines. Oh, nice. Who writes, good day, Ask an Atheist. I grew up Catholic, but I'm now agnostic. One event the Book of Revelation is foretold is the putting of the mark of the beast on foreheads and on the right hand, and those who are not implanted, or whatever you call it, with it will not be able to buy things nor eat, etc. Now, I have seen some people who were implanted in their hands and their heads with so-called microchips to locate a person, see his heart rate, etc. Anything to say about this, Ask an Atheist? I've never heard of any RFID technology, which is, I guess, what is now currently the mark of the beast, implanted in somebody's forehead. That's a new one on me.
That's a bad placement.
Yeah. You'd have to slam your head at the RFID reader, which is great if you like headbutting things, but it strikes me as a little less than efficient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, literally, Revelations was actually specifically about Rome.
Right.
Like, they're just trying to, just because there's something similar to something that's written about in the Bible, it has something to do with RFID technology, but it doesn't.
I seem to recall that even the 666 thing was a reference to the Emperor Nero.
Yeah, right.
I'm not scholastic enough to say anything about that meaningfully, but that, you know, the whole thing about the Book of Revelations, this is apparently foretelling the fall of Rome. Rome fell, not quite like it did. I don't remember D&D animals showing up during during the reign of Odoacer or whatever his name is. It apparently didn't work out that way. But now it's a great tool for technological fear mongering for the purposes of getting your fairy tales across. It's as technology has increased and as things have moved on. Whatever is the new, you know, there's just always a technology du jour, which is now the thing that is making, that is now the mark of the beast. It was UPC codes.
Credit cards.
Oh, cash registers. Literally anytime something new and interesting happens with finance and buying things. Oh, it's the mark of the beast. It's the mark of the beast. Come join my church and don't drink the Kool-Aid yet.
Yeah.
And the RFID thing is another example of that. And if there, it's one thing for the RFID technology, but he's also specifically mentioning like implantable biosensors, which have nothing to do with identification, but actually, you know, fixing problems in the human body, which strikes me as something that people would generally like.
Yeah, it sounds like a good thing.
Keeping people alive is nice. Yes.
Being able to actually have some of it's like biodegradable skin ink that will tell you like your blood sugar levels.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah. I guess I'm bitter and angry today, if you can't tell. So it's coming out kind of negative, but it is a good question. And I think the thing is in situations like this, Rex, is that it really is. You got to see what it's being used for and how it's being used. There's the religious angle, which is just fear mongering for the purposes of getting the religion across of. You know, getting people to avoid the real world and pay attention to the religion. But to be honest with you, if somebody's forced to get implants so they can, I would be against that anyway, and I don't need to reference the Bible to talk about it. I just, you know, as a privacy advocate, I have huge problems with it.
I mean, there's some cool uses too. I mean,
yeah,
you know, if you're rich enough and you want to be able to open your car without having a key, it's
well,
neat.
All the people that like put magnets in their fingers.
Yeah. Well, that's what I would do.
Yeah.
I'm not really interested in the RFID stuff because I am a privacy advocate and I don't want something that can be read even at a short distance that could uniquely identify me digitally.
Yeah, that'd be.
I already have a face and that's bad enough. especially when it's this one. Hey! But the magnets, like, that's the kind of, like, biohacking stuff that I could really get into, because it's a sensory tweak. Now I have the ability to detect electromagnetic fields in a way that I wouldn't have been able to otherwise.
Oh, I never thought of that.
That's why you get the magnets.
I thought they were just so you could pick things up.
No. I knew somebody, not personally, but online, who had one, and he would be able to tell, like, when a cable was live just by picking it up.
Oh, because slick.
Because it would cause, you know, ripple currents in the magnet, and so it would tweak a little bit as he would move. And he said when he's getting used to it, it's pretty unpleasant, but it actually ended up being helpful until he needed to get an MRI.
Right. And then, did he take it out before?
Yeah. Oh, no, he had it removed, and then, yeah.
And then put back in?
That'd be a fairly expensive mistake to make, I think. But I've never heard anybody seriously try to enforce any sort of stuff like that, but they've been talking about technologies that you should fear since pre-industrial times.
And yeah.
Not, you know, it's like, it's as we've said before, it's been the end time since the beginning times, and this is just another example of that. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to the break. When we come back, Becky's going to join you, these two, to talk about the more educational aspects of Billy Graham's recent passing and death, I guess. I just speak euphemistically. And some In God We Trust stuff.
Has In God We Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster In God We Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an In God We Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
Hello, and welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I'm hosting this segment today, Becky Friedman, and with me in the studio are Josh and Wesley. How are you guys?
No, doing pretty good.
It's not snowing, so hey.
That's right. We had a week of different snow off and on, surprise snow or kind of, you know, so-so snow. What do you think about it? Yeah, you're kind of out there in King County.
I love the
Pierce
snow.
County. You love
no,
it?
No, I'm actually Pierce County, but north of Pierce County.
Okay. And usually in that, it's sort of approaching the foothills, or you can get different weather than what we get here in Tacoma. You guys got a lot of snow out there?
Yeah, we get hit harder and a lot more often than you guys do.
And everyone make it out to work okay. We hope so, at least.
Yeah, I mean, we had a couple of scares of, like, will the shipyard commander call work off or not? But other than that, yeah, it was pretty fun.
We had a couple delayed starts, and I didn't get the word, so I still went to work normal times.
So did I. So did I, working for a school district that, you know, kind of was a little behind on the announcing when you're delayed versus canceled and things like that. But we actually have an email about snow. Ooh. And you think, what do atheists have to think about snow for? Well, this is from Mike from Seattle. And he wrote to us saying, recently, a friend of mine mentioned that he missed loving snow unconditionally. I think that's really a kid thing, right? It
yeah.
doesn't matter how inconveniencing it is. If you're a kid, you love snow. But once you're an adult, I don't unconditionally love this junk that I have to drive to work in, right? So Mike said, I reflected on that a little bit and realized that while I love snow, I'm not sure that I can ever remember loving snow unconditionally. My earliest memories are of wishing and praying for it to snow, and those are coupled with memories of being shamed by Catholic educators who laid a guilt trip on us for offering those prayers, as though 8-year-olds praying for snow were the cause of the suffering of the homeless people left out in the cold.
That's weird. That's like the theme of every Christmas movie, is that like there's always a prayer for a white Christmas.
And I'm still thinking about all these churches with all of this space in them where they could fit a lot of homeless people.
Well, Mike actually had some further reflections as an atheistic adult. He says, I'm old enough now to know that my wishes and prayers do not affect the weather, but I find it interesting to examine how my religious upbringing still affects my experience of the world. As I left work last night, I stood outside waiting for my bus as a light snow had begun to fall. I left my headphones off to enjoy the soft silence that always seems to come with fresh snowfall, even a light dusting like this. I was also keenly aware that there would be people suffering that night in the cold, as they do most nights this time of year. And this snowfall was a reminder to me that I should do more to alleviate that sort of suffering. But a child who prays for snow should not be made to feel responsible for that suffering. Thanks, Mike, for your reflections. I think that it's really emblematic of what it can mean to, one, be an observant and compassionate adult, and also an adult that is leaving behind some of these elements of religious upbringings that we can examine with a critical eye. So were you guys in your religious childhoods ever made to, feel, were you the eat all your things? There's people suffering who are, starving, eat your peas because, God gave you peas and we thanked him before, with grace before our meal.
Oh, not in a religious context.
Really? Oh, not particularly. Extremely religious context, but yes, I definitely heard that quite a bit, and I was always of the opinion to like, okay, good, let's ship them to these people. And I think I said that once or twice, and that didn't go over too well. But I don't see any reason to shame a child for, just one of the simple beauties and pleasures of life, a sunset, a pretty light snow, anything like that. It's just horrible.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to shame somebody for wanting something that's a little bit changed from the current circumstance. And snow is a nice little change.
I think that it is a really interesting thing that despite being very far away from a religious upbringing, we can still have these kinds of messages that affect our thinking now, but in non-religious ways. So when we're happy because maybe work has been canceled and we get, sort of a bonus little time off, we can at the same time be compassionate in thinking about people for whom this kind of snowfall is not so convenient, is not so beautiful, is not so lovely. It doesn't have to lessen our own enjoyment of it, but it can help make us aware that, hey, we can do more to alleviate that kind of suffering, but without the threat of God shaming us. And I think that's a really powerful thing as atheists and humanists to say, what can we do to improve our world without the specter of religious shame hanging over us? So thank you, Mike. If you would like to write in to Ask an Atheist, you can email us at questions@atheist.radio or tweet us at AskAnAtheistWA. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/AskAnAtheistWA. And we'll field your questions or comments as best we can. So from thinking of Mike's reflections as a young child in Catholic school to some things that are going on in current public schools today around the country. You guys ready?
Yes.
Yep.
We're going to head to Florida and a few other states because right now, Florida's legislative house overwhelmingly passed a bill that requires In God We Trust to be displayed conspicuously in schools and school board buildings. HB 839's sponsor, Democratic Representative and Christian minister Kim Daniels of Jacksonville, believes God spoke to her saying, do not politicize what has happened in Florida and do not make this a thing of division. Daniels asserted that God is not Republican nor Democrat, nor black nor white, but rather that God is the light. She contends that schools need light in them like never before. And while Daniels notes that gun issues must be addressed, she remarked in Bill discussion that the real thing that needs to be addressed are issues of the heart. An identical bill sits in the Florida State Senate currently.
Wow. So if they need to bring in the light into the schools, why don't they just get like high efficiency LED lights and just, you know, save a little bit of power bill and everything, you know.
I don't think that's the light that she's referring to.
Oh, dang it.
Well, the voice in her head immediately fails in its mission not to do a thing of division. Immediately, the voice in her head is wanting her to make a thing of division, although she's claiming that it's Republican, Democrat, that shouldn't be dividing, but it's inferring that everybody has to believe in a God and should.
Well, her God.
Yeah, her God, absolutely. But she's not going to say that directly.
So what if you are someone who trusts in God, but your God that you trust in is not the light, but rather the darkness?
Oh, you mean like Satan? Satan?
So, or many gods who represent maybe perhaps different, you know, elements of nature. Maybe you are animistic in your faith and you have a God that is the God of light, a God that is the God of storms, a God that is the God of fertility. Should we trust in all of those gods per Representative Daniel?
No, there's only one true God. How dare you?
Well, it said, you know, address issues of the heart. And if someone's heart says that, you know, there is no God, yet I want to alleviate suffering through no trust in God, or if someone's heart says there are many gods, do they belong in Florida schools?
Apparently no.
So here's also the thing. She was moved to sponsor this bill as a Christian minister because she heard the voice of God. Yet the one in the Senate has been sitting there for a month. I mean, it's not like there's an identical language bill that's there. She just, you know, heard this bill through the voice of God in a vision.
Again, voices in her head.
It always kind of bothered me. Like, okay, fine. Christians speak to their God. That's fine. But when you start hearing voices in your head, there might be a problem.
I think there's a problem when you start using what you believe to be the vision of God or the voice of God to try and influence legislation. And here's the thing. We've, for so many years, for 50 years, we atheists who don't trust in God and wish that it were not proclaimed in the halls of government, you know, we've been told, hey, you know what? In God we trust is a valid motto because, you know, God can be anything to anyone. It's not a specific God. It's not an endorsement of a specific religion. And besides, all of this is just a ceremonially deist part of our national history, right? But this really puts the lie to the test because she says that God is light and we need light in schools more than ever. She's saying we need God in schools. How is this ceremonial or non-religious in any sense of it?
Yeah. Ceremonial deism is garbage concept that doesn't even really mean anything. It's,
well, I mean, it pretty much without fail, no matter time you hear somebody about something like this, whatever person is trying to get this bill passed is also referencing their Christian God, but it's always a ceremonial kind of deistic kind of thing. But until you like put their feet to the fire and like, oh yeah, it's really about their Christian God and not just about trying to give warm fuzzies to everybody.
Yeah.
The fact that it's a minister who's sponsoring this bill and invoking this religious speech really should make it very apparent that this is a religiously motivated bill that's affecting kids in Florida. And Florida is not an undiverse state. There's atheists. There's people of all religions. It's a high immigrant population state. There's ports of entry in, you know, lots of different places. It's a highly diverse state. And you know, a religious preacher who happens to have been elected, which is fine, should not be claiming that this is not dividing in any sense of the word.
Ironically, I find it ironic that so the term ceremonial deism was created in 1984. So,
and that was through court cases.
Yeah, through a court case.
Court arguments saying, but that's why it's okay to mention all this God in government, right?
Yeah, but it's a very Orwellian purpose, and I just find it kind of funny that in 1984 that this term came about.
Ah, gotcha there. All right, all right. Well, you know, we might think that this is only related to Florida, but we reported, you know, just a few weeks ago that the same thing's happening in Wyoming. It's not just Wyoming and Florida, though, guys. This is a bill that has all the same writers and is being floated in various states. Besides Wyoming and Florida, it's also in South Carolina and Oklahoma. These are highly religious states with highly fervently religious elected leaders. And The when it passed in Florida, it got a standing ovation, right? Applause. Wow. And standing right. ovation from both Democrats
obviously all Christians.
And Republicans. There were 10 people that did not vote in favor of this in the Florida, you know, state house. There were 97 that did vote in favor of it. And yeah, okay, this is not a Republican versus Democrat thing, but this definitely is a religiously exclusionary thing and an attempt to get, you know, religion and belief in God established in public schools, which specifically is disallowed by our federal constitution and loads of case law in that respect.
Any bill that gets floated like this really needs to be flushed.
I'm in agreement. Ooh. Unfortunately, Wesley, that did not happen in Arkansas.
Dang.
So an Arkansas law just went into effect this week that requires In God We Trust posters to be in schools and libraries. Of course, it requires that they be all donated. So you have a law that says you have to do this. Also, it can't be paid for with government. So go ahead and find your contributors to go pay for these things. But don't worry, American Legion is on top of it.
Yeah, of course they are. They're the ones that put all the 10 commandment monuments in front of our courthouses.
So American Legion, most of them are veterans, right? And very patriotic and sort of have a lot of support our troops kind of thing. Josh, you're a vet. What's do you have any kind of interaction with folks of the American Legion?
No. Basically, it's a place where you can go to have a couple of drinks with fellow veterans. I've only gone a couple, and they're usually pretty shabby places. It's not worth a...
Well, it's because they spend all their money on getting framed posters with American flags and In God We Trust to be able to, you know, outfit every school with them, right?
I just don't think they're very well funded. They're just...
I've been invited to one, and I seem to recall very cheap liquor, too.
Yeah, it's all house, liquor well drinks, and then yeah. and Bud Light.
So a shabby drinking club that enforces equated patriotism and Christianity.
Yeah.
Good on you, American Legion. Okay. So back to, South Carolina, if we can, because I'm ready to leave Arkansas. I'm ready to leave these these folks that, you know, want to... I'm ready to leave these folks that are wanting to impose their version of Christianity and their vision of God onto, you know, school kids. And let's go to a church in South Carolina that is perfectly allowed to espouse their own particular faith in God. But they encountered some unfortunate vandalism. Church in Simpsonville, South Carolina, was the target of Spanish language graffiti that praised Satan and cursed the late Billy Graham. Pastor Sarah Searcy of Life Spring Community Church, which is an evangelical Methodist and Nazarene church, reportedly discovered the black spray painted message Vaya con el diablo, meaning go with the devil, which is an inversion of the common blessing Vaya con Dios, or go with God. Vandals also painted pentagrams and a misspelled message that roughly translates to hell with Billy Graham, or down with Billy Graham, worship Satan, we love him. There are no current leads on suspects. And actually, since writing this brief, we did find an update. There was another spray-painted message that used expletives towards Billy Graham as well. Guys, what do you make of this?
Unequivocally going to say right now, don't vandalize. We do not support vandalism.
Right. Goodness, this poor little strip mall church definitely got tagged with some bad vandalism. So yeah, don't do that and spell properly.
Yeah, that was a one. Billy Graham was spelled G-R-A-M-H.
Yep.
So some confusion about where the silent H goes in. As someone who is a Spanish speaker, I also couldn't help but notice that the Spanish itself was poorly constructed and poorly written. There were some grammatical errors here and there, which could be common to a non-native speaker, but it could also be common to just someone with a lower level of literacy who is a native speaker of Spanish.
Or somebody pretending that they speak Spanish because they want to drive the suspicion somewhere else.
Huh, you don't think that would ever occur in South Carolina at a church, right? That's completely just not even... That's not something that might possibly occur, that people might have that kind of motivation.
Well, I mean, you get two birds with one stone. You get to say bad things about Satanists, and then you're like, oh, look at those bad foreigners. They're tagging a building.
And Stone 3 is a publicity. I mean, sure. I don't ever heard of this church, but now it's national news.
So I will say that, you know, there's a lot that either real Satanists that believe in a literal Satan, or atheists, or people that are non-evangelical Christian, you know, a lot of us could take issue with the teachings and preachings of Billy Graham. A lot of us could take issue with how he was able to shape American presidential policy and even foreign policy from the time of Truman to the time of Trump. And a lot of us could take issue with that. But is a poorly spelled, you know, a tagging of a funny little pentagram on some little church the way that is, you know, best able to express exactly how Billy Graham has harmed American secularism and in general American policy?
I mean, if you want to see somebody say bad things or not agree with things that Billy Graham did, come to my Facebook page. As far as, you know, going in general and saying something like this, yeah, it's just, you know, not classy and crass.
Yeah, or not definitely doing a good solid driving of your point if this is how you think you're going to go about actually saying something about Billy Graham. This actually points as a benefit to the image of Billy Graham.
Sort of fighting the dark forces of Satan and, you know, oh, we have to pick up after this.
Now, emphasis on the dark.
Now, Wesley, you've been involved with the Satanic Temple of Seattle.
Yep.
As someone who would associate with the literary Satan as sort of an object of defiance, as we've discussed in our show Ask an Atheist, mm-hmm. You know, would someone using satanic graffiti against a church, would that motivate you as someone who affiliates or associates with Satan to say, you know what, this doesn't represent me, I'm going to help that church clean up their graffiti?
Yes, in that circumstance, yeah. I've heard of a few different times where churches have come under attack and not rightfully so, and they've been defended by the Satanic Temple. They are there to basically make sure that people are safe and protected and not, you know, taken advantage of. So yeah, I mean, they're. I'm totally lost.
So being an atheist and being a Satanist, you don't want to spray paint churches.
Sure.
No. You're open to criticizing Billy Graham through your own venues like Facebook or things like that.
Sure.
Or radio. Yeah. And you'd be willing to say, hey, you know what? We can help defend other people's rights to worship as they see fit and possibly even help clean up their vandalism.
Yeah.
Now, we're all the way in Washington State, but if you feel so motivated, this is a church in Simpsonville, South Carolina. Now, I'm sure that, you know, churches carry their liability insurance and will probably have a lot of folks that are, you know, invested in cleaning up this graffiti. But, you know, it's something to investigate and look at and things like that. I think that we've got a lot of ways to criticize Billy Graham, poorly misspelled Spanish, possibly from a native speaker or from someone impersonating a speaker or impersonating a Satanist. We know that's prone to happen in certain circumstances. Cap your spray cans, use them for something fun like a community mural or something like that, that, you know, depicts the diversity of your town or a beautiful vision of, you know, folks working together. Hey, you know what? If you really do adore and worship Satan, do a community mural where you're able to install your beautiful understanding of how Satan should be worshipped. But you know what? Lay off the churches.
So I'd like to make a quick real-time correction.
Oh, yeah, what's that?
Ten Commandment monuments were actually provided by the Fraternal Order of Eagles and not the American Legion.
Oh, the FOE.
Okay, so, but American Legion is totally been, they have totally been on the framed In God We Trust.
Yeah, they definitely have a religious stance behind everything they do in support of veterans.
Well, Well, if you've got something to say about the Satanists or spray paint or Billy Graham for that matter, go ahead and give us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC or email us at questions@atheist.radio. We'll be back after the break with perhaps some more discussion of Billy Graham, maybe some other things about, things that listeners have asked us about, or maybe what it means to be in a parody marriage. Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I regret to inform you that the wonderful and chipper Becky is gone, and you're stuck with me again. But you were saying something in the break about that I think is worth mentioning. Josh.
Well, yeah. Not to defend Billy Graham, but...
Why not?
There are things that... I mean... In the Christian curve, if you grade by the Christian curve, he probably wasn't a bad person because mm-hmm. in so much that he was, he never got caught up in the scandals that most television evangelicals got caught up in. There was no financial scandal that we know of. He didn't diddle little kids that we know of. And at this point, there's no reason to actually believe that he did.
I think that's definitely worth mentioning.
So, yeah. I mean, with that being said, though, I mean, he was still a supremely anti-gay bigot.
Yeah.
That also got caught with his foot in his mouth with the Nixon tapes.
Oh, the Nixon tapes. Yeah. Jeez.
He said he was an anti-Semitic, but when those tapes came out, he even wrote about it in his book in the 90s. And then when the tapes became declassified in 2002, yeah, he had a lot of poo on his face for that.
I would imagine. Yeah.
So that's my defense of Billy Graham.
Kind of takedown of him, if takedown is what it is, I might challenge that. Has it more about what he opened the door for than what he himself did. And that's worth saying. I try not to be in the business of sounding people out worse than they actually are. I think my tendency to exaggerate might make that a little bit more of a problem than it might otherwise be. But he caused some problems. He opened the door for some crazy people.
A lot of crazy people.
Like this one. Identical bills in Wyoming and South Carolina would prohibit the states from respecting, endorsing, or recognizing any parody marriage policy or policies that treat sexual orientation as a suspect class and defines a parody marriage as any union that isn't between one man and one woman. Bill sponsors in South Carolina claim allowing same-sex couples to marry has led to the persecution of non-observers of gay marriage, as well as efforts by believers and practitioners of parody marriage to infiltrate and indoctrinate minors in public schools to their religious worldview, which is questionably moral and obscene. The bill's main sponsor in South Carolina, State Rep. Stephen Long, contends that the legislation is about upholding constitutionally guaranteed separation of church and state. Thanks, listener Anthony of South Carolina, for bringing this to our attention. Oh, boy.
That is
This is pretty great. Before we get into the meat of this, because there's a lot here, I do want to point out the persecution of non-observers of gay marriage. So this is a bunch of people saying, I'm persecuted because I can't be a legislative bigot. This is like calling... this is calling the judges at the Nuremberg tribunals bullies.
Yeah.
this is like saying the world court in The Hague is abusive towards Slobodan Milosevic or something like that. This is a hilarious statement that completely misconstrues the part this person plays in actual persecution of real human beings who have a position that is actually counter to this guy's majoritarian arrogance.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm not a bully. You're a bully for pointing out that I'm a bully for bullying.
This is that aren't you intolerant? Aren't you so intolerant for not tolerating my intolerance?
Absolutely.
It's these wonderful little, I think I've found a hypocrisy because I'm not really clear on how language works. Kind of hypocrisy. I love it. Not hypocrisy, kind of misunderstanding. I love these little I hate them, but I love them because I hate them. This sort of pseudo intellectualism of this turning persecution into something other than complete moral turpitude. What happened to my language?
You got Becky'd.
Yeah, apparently. Okay. But let's talk about this, Bill.
All I can do is laugh.
The bill's author is Mark Christopher Sevier, or Sevier, perhaps, a religious anti-LGBT crusader, who came to our attention a while ago for trying to marry his laptop in several states. He sued in Alabama, Utah, and Texas to get his marriage recognized, but all suits were dismissed because you really can't marry a laptop. Not yet.
Maybe after one passes the Turing test, maybe it can actually learn how to consent.
Right.
Until that day.
Yeah, until that day. Until that apparently great day. I'm being creepy. So he tried to get a parody marriage done, and then he flipped the script and said, so if I can't do this, I'm going to say then this should not be allowed, but now I'm going to broaden the category to actually talk about real human beings who can consent and, according to the Supreme Court, have these freedoms available to them. So this is just a bunch of noise making that isn't going to do anything. I mean, this is a bill that's unconstitutional on its face, is it not?
It's absolutely unconstitutional, but I mean, really? It won't happen ever? Really?
What do you mean?
I have no faith in nothing stupid being passed.
Oh.
I just think that, like...
I think these are going to... This may pass, so, but I don't think anything... They're not going to get what they want out of it, unless what they want is just to have a fight that doesn't go anywhere.
They will get a lawsuit, quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
So if that's their aim, to get a losing lawsuit, they will get
it. I know. Okay, so in the break, we were talking about stretching. So now I'm going to ask you to stretch your minds as to being, let's pretend for a moment that you are not a crazy person who tried to... You're not the crazy person who tries to marry his laptop.
Okay.
Also, in another dismissed lawsuit, accused Apple of negligently selling products that do not automatically block pornography. He demanded that users obtain a password from Apple to access objectionable or obscene material.
So every computer device, whatever, from Apple should have a net nanny built into it.
And just Apple.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just Apple, not Samsung, not Google, just Apple.
Well,
because he's not doing this to grandstand or anything. This totally isn't. He's totally serious. All right, so this guy does weird things to get attention to his Bronze Age dumb ideas that harm people. But you are not this guy. You are the politician in Wyoming, in South Carolina, who is listening to this guy and taking his idea in order to implement this parody marriage concept. Assuming that you are smart enough to realize that this would be immediately invalidated in the court systems if it were to pass, what's your end game? Why are you doing this? Attention?
Because you want to be the persecuted Christian that gets more votes, more money for re-election? I mean, you're going to be the persecuted person.
No, there's got to be more to it than that. That's.
I mean, it's a fairly decent re-election strategy.
Is it?
I find it hard to believe that there's any kind of intellectual strategy behind that. It's probably because they bought into the whole negative is a negative equals negative logic and decide, you know what, I'm going to go with it because Stephen Long probably isn't that smart of a representative.
Right. Yeah. So okay. So you might not be that smart, but I'm just like, what. You got the temerity and the wherewithal to get elected to a state legislature, so I assume you're not completely out of it. So there's got to be some sort of end game, and I sort of wonder. I could see that being I'm going to get reelected on this by picking up the persecution, you know, the persecution badge, but I could also see a more fiscally responsible conservative eating your lunch in an election cycle because you're wasting the state's money on really, really Looney Tunes legislation authored by a guy who used to practice law in Tennessee but can't anymore because he was deemed incapacitated from continuing to practice law due to mental infirmity or illness.
Oh my.
He was disbarred because he does stuff like this. So I just sort of wonder what the thinking is there sometimes.
I think people found something interesting on the internet, and didn't research this guy.
Yeah.
And even if they did, they didn't really care. They just, like the idea of what this bill says.
I mean, for people like me and most Americans, this is, this isn't kind of it's not a non-starter. But for the people who that this might speak to, it would also, might not speak well of you as a lawmaker to be taking advice from somebody who might actually have, who is trying to persecute people by marrying his laptop. I mean, the optics on this are just insane.
The guy has issues, no doubt.
Right.
But, a lot of people aren't going to remember this or Google this gent in the first place.
But then if they don't, but we're talking about it and we're getting this from the media in these states. I mean, it obviously is being talked about. I don't know, this idea that people don't read and don't talk and don't look things up on the internet just kind of falls apart in the face of, the Roy Moore fiasco. I mean, that obviously worked. So I think there's a limit.
Just barely, though. I mean, he was almost elected.
You say just barely, but the last election, Jeff Sessions won by 93%. You have to look at it proportionally. Wow. I mean, it looks, when you look at it just in a one slice of time, it looks like he barely squeaked by. But if you look at it in the context of what was going on, that was a pretty amazing victory. That was substantial because he went from 93% of the electorate to, 46% of the electorate in one election cycle? That's nasty.
And it's being repeated around the country.
Hopefully.
The Trump effect.
You see, because it's like, this doesn't make sense, where this one kind of makes complete sense to me. Attorney General Jeff Sessions recently made changes at the Department of Justice, which would force every office to assign a staff member to monitor religious litigation. This new position would be responsible for monitoring all litigation involving religious liberty, including cases when religious liberty is used as a defense or when offices file a suit involving religious issues. The directive also states that the DOJ lawyers must also consult with political appointees before launching litigation involving religious liberty. This elevates religious beliefs above all other cases. The change also robs the branch offices of their autonomy, which forces competent field offices to be dependent on Trump's Christian appointees and pushes a Christian narrative over all others.
This is religious test all written all over it.
Yeah.
This is definitely stepping over the line. This cannot be legal.
This could backfire on them pretty bad. The minute somebody who isn't Jeff Sessions takes this job in less than a year.
Once November happens, we take the House and the Senate, and then one hopes.
Like this one. Well, you say we, I say they. this one does have religious tests kind of waiting around the wings, but the Department of Justice has always had a lot of freedom about what cases it chooses to pursue and what cases it doesn't choose to pursue. I don't know a valid, like, where the first thing we talked about, they're passing a law that clearly goes up against established Supreme Court case law and the Constitution. Where this one is just administrative in nature, but it's a decision administrative in nature that will severely change the way the Department of Justice goes after these Establishment Clause cases. The defense against this sort of thing is a little bit more opaque to me.
Well, just Jeff Sessions, he put out a memo, a change to the DOJ's rules that basically affect all of the DOJ, and this is going to be horrible for a while, but let's see.
Is it?
I don't like the way that every field office has to check in with the higher ups to say whether or not they take a case, and especially if it's a religious one.
It's not the first time the Department of Justice has handed down something where they said if you take this kind of case, you got to check with us first. It's not the first kind of thing that it's not the first time that something like this has happened.
Yeah.
And the situation I was going to bring up, I just blanked on it, but it was like, okay, this is a thing that we're talking about. It's in the, you know, it's in the political discussion. It's in sort of the air. So talk with us about it first before we pursue this. Isn't necessarily a bad thing, but given that it's Jeff Sessions and given his stance on these things, I could see this going back. But it brings me back to my question. What's the defense on this? Like, what would it look like?
As far as the defense goes on it, I think it's if we can't fight it at the Department of Justice and say our independent, then we have to wait it out, and then fight each case independently in court and say that's not justified for them to take this position.
Sure. Yeah. I guess.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, especially if we're not talking about things directly dealing with the Constitution. But if there's religious bias in there, then it becomes a constitutionality issue.
Yeah. So you would have to have, I guess strategically, you would have to have a lot of bad calls made by the Department of Justice to set up a bit pattern of behavior to show that this is harmful. I guess would be the way it would have to go.
And then what would the fix be for that? Because we're finding out with the memo on how they're going to treat marijuana. That's just temporary. Well, it doesn't.
Oh, I didn't hear about that. What's going on there?
Oh, they're based. I can't remember what the memo's called, but basically they're ignoring it. And so there appears to be plans for the DOGA to start enforcing marijuana laws in states that legalized it.
It was the memo that came out during the Obama administration saying,
oh, I know that one. Okay, yeah. So there wasn't a new one or anything.
No, there's not a new memo. They're just ignoring it. They're just saying that memo is no longer.
Well, it's a memo.
Yes, right.
Yeah, and you can just replace it with another memo that said, disregard that, et cetera, et cetera. And then the Department of Justice has a new, you know, has a new set of priorities, which happens every time there's a administrative change. So, yeah, I don't really quite know where to take this one, and unfortunately. You know, I'd like to hear from you guys. If you have a defense on this, or you have an idea of, I don't like the sound of this, and it makes me feel kind of, it makes me concerned, but I don't know. I'm a little vague on where the concern comes in on this one, so I'd maybe have some emails to talk about this next week. Our domain is atheist.radio. Our website is atheist.radio. Our voicemail is 844-753-7842. You can email us at questions at askanatheist.tv or atheistradio. I'm going to make that mistake a lot. Thank you, Wes.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Josh.
You're welcome.
See you guys next week.